powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Needs no real introduction, but given that it's radio, you don't really know until I tell you. It's Bruce Feldman, reporter for Fox Sports and The Athletic. Bruce, how's it going?
It is going good. It's a crazy day in college football.
Okay, so I have questions about the Pac-12, but Bruce, you know where I have to start. You know where this interview must start today, and that is with Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. I'm going to start with just the simplest. I don't know if you can answer it, but are one of these men more in the right than the other?
Neither.
It's a fair question.
I don't, this is the thing where it makes them both look really bad.
Yeah.
Saban might be wrong by saying when he said that the entire class was bought, as opposed to maybe some of the top guys might have been bought. And then I think Jimbo pushing back so hard, and Jimbo's calling Nick Saban, who by the way was his mentor, a narcissist, saying he thinks he's God. Jimbo saying he's never bought any players, and I don't know. It's the wildest press conference in a league that once had Bobby Petrino wearing a neck brace after getting caught, infidelity, and that can seem like tame compared to what Jimbo just did this morning.
It does, Bruce. It's crazy, and it's also like they're operating or wanting to operate in the old system, right? That Nick Saban is complaining that, hey, these guys bought these players like it's illegal or just pointing to that fact that is the reason why they lost out on the top class this year. And then Jimbo Fisher, opening this press conference like he's being, accused of doing things illegal. I don't think Nick Saban accused him of doing anything illegal, just saying, look, they paid a lot of money for these players, in terms of NIL, which would be true. So how do you take Jimbo Fisher's reaction to this? Do you think he's missing the point? Do you think he's just way overreacting to something that Nick didn't even say?
I don't think he is, because I think it was the wording of how Saban said he bought his whole class, and that was the inference. I think this was two guys airing a lot of dirty laundry, and they're not just regular coaches. One's arguably the greatest coach, not even arguably, the best coach, most successful coach in the history of college football. The other one has won a national title, is the first assistant coach to actually beat Saban, and also is making, $10+ million a year. And it just was like a grease fire that went off last night, and it's still burning.
Hey, Bruce, I know already that there are people listening that are thinking, I don't really understand why everyone's so mad. I don't get it. Would you mind explaining just kind of, not going into detail, but how has the landscape of college football changed with the addition of student athletes having the right to their names, images, and likenesses?
Yeah, so for a lot of people now, the NIL stands for now it's legal. And so it went from college student athletes in all sports having the opportunity to make some money for their name, image, and likeness. Well, what it's really become also a bigger opportunity for agents to shop recruits around and for boosters / collectives to get involved and pay a lot of money to try to land them. And it's created all sorts of interesting dynamic. The NCAA is kind of toothless at this point, and it is the wild, wild west.
Bruce, we were talking about questions about how do you go about regulating this, and my answer was that I don't think that you can approach regulating this at this current moment in time, that there's going to need to be a period of letting this play out and see how it plays out to kind of determine, maybe some of the issues and problems that are there. But do you ever see a point where they can eventually get to a point where they regulate this to some degree, maybe not a ton like the NCAA of the past, but at least some stipulations of some kind?
you know, some try to put some version of guardrails in. I think they're scared to death of antitrust lawsuits and lawyers coming in and how that would go for them, especially when the Supreme Court has already voiced an opinion on it. I don't know what they do. I really don't. I think, you know, there's going to be an aspect of this where, you know, and look, Jake, you know, you are a former five-star quarterback not that long ago, but, you know, if you look at,
thank you,
I think some of these schools are going to try to pay, are trying to pay seven figures for some of these five-star players, some of them quarterbacks, and they better be Cam Newton for them,
right,
what they're investing in. And how is that going to work out where, you know, some school may pay, be on the hook for $4 or $6 million for a quarterback, and maybe the starting quarterback right now is getting paid a fraction of that. Mm. You know, what happens if that kid isn't very good? You know, yeah, they're not going to pay him, but like, it just, it's a weird situation. I mean, one of the things that is kind of farcical about this collective business that now is around a lot of college programs is there's got to be plausible deniability for the coaching staffs to not be involved with it. Well, the thought that some school and some collective is paying, you know, $500,000 for some three-star defensive lineman, and they're doing it on their own where the coaching staff isn't involved in that is ridiculous, because all of a sudden some player is going to sign there and the coaching staff doesn't want him or doesn't know that you're doing the deal. That makes no sense, you know, and so that's kind of where we're at right now at this point in time.
Do you think anything changes pressure-wise or anything for players? I mean, I think the thing that piques my interest most is saying, what if you spend this much money, or rather a third party presumably does, and that guy doesn't end up working out? It makes me wonder, Bruce, whether there's going to be – you can't cut people in the same way, quite the same way that you could with the NFL. I mean, obviously you can revoke scholarships, but it makes me wonder about the player's point of view, whether that's going to change the pressure, the expectation, whether it makes that business relationship even more transactional.
Well, I mean, honestly, I think you have somebody right now, you know, with you who has probably got as good a perspective as anybody. Now, look, I mean, when Jake was playing and coming up, I don't know, what was that, 12 years ago?
Yeah.
Like, a lot more has changed.
Somewhere in there.
But he could probably speak better to the pressure of being a five-star quarterback and what that means than almost anybody, because it's not, you know, the money wasn't, I think, the money was not a factor there, where it's not like he's, you know, got, you know, like people know how much he's making. All of a sudden now, that quarterback, I'm not saying Jake, but that quarterback is getting hit up by all these people who are around him who are like, realize that this kid who probably didn't have any money, and the family might not have had a lot of money, maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but all of a sudden now other people are trying to get close to this person or, you know, get involved with that in a different way. It just changed. And now, you know, all the relationships are different. You are, for that quarterback who's the $8 million quarterback who's going into the SEC next year or 2 years from now, it's like everybody on campus, you know, everybody around them is going to know that. Like, I would think that would be hard to compartmentalize if you were a 28-year-old in the NFL. How's it going to be if you're a 17-year-old on the other side of the country where you're kind of new to it? I think that's a lot. I'm not saying it's a burden, but I can imagine how it could be.
Yeah, it's I can't even imagine adding that extra layer to on top of all of the craziness that comes along with the expectations and everything else that you just outlined. It just puts you've already got basically a fire, and now you're throwing gasoline on it. It's pretty interesting, and to see the fallout that could potentially happen here is going to be one to watch. There's no question. So, Bruce, I wanted to switch gears here. You know, look, we're in the Pac-12. We're in Pac-12 country here. I wanted to ask you about what you thought the current landscape of the Pac-12 was, and is there any recent, you know, moves that have happened either with individual schools or just the Pac-12 as a conference that have given you any optimism that things can turn around for this conference?
Well, I do think, you know, Lincoln Riley coming out to USC is a big coup for the league, and certainly for USC. And they haven't had an identity. Now they do have one. I think he will be able to recruit to it. There's at least, you know, enthusiasm for the flagship school, the Pac-12. That's a big plus. You know, I think Utah is, you know, as long as Kyle Whittingham's there, I think you have to respect them internally because of what they do and how well they're coached. And certainly I think Chip Kelly's now got a little bit of momentum and traction at UCLA. And so we'll see if they can, you know, build off that and take the next step. Because I really think, especially with, like, you know, we'll see how it works out at Oregon with Mario Cristobal now is down in Miami and Dan Lanning takes over. Do they take a step forward or do they take a step back? Because the North, you know, obviously, you know, I thought Jimmy Lake would have worked out a lot better. It didn't work out, you know, well there. They, you know, I think Kalen DeBoer's a good coach. We'll see how that goes. But you got Stanford that has definitely backslid in the last few years. You know, it's an interesting situation now where you're kind of looking and thinking, okay, there's three programs in the Pac-12 South, two that had pretty good years last year. I mean, certainly Utah had more than pretty good. I mean, the way they finished the year. But I think so much of it is really tied to can UCLA build and can, you know, USC really capitalize on the enthusiasm for Lincoln Riley right now. I think that's the biggest thing if you're a Pac-12 fan you can be excited about.
Bruce, your latest feature for The Athletic explores that 6 months, well, I don't want to say search for Mario Cristobal. Miami made it clear who they were looking for, but basically what went into a behind-the-scenes look at the hiring of Cristobal at Miami. Now, you're obviously well-connected within college football. Did you find that over the course of your research and investigating for this article, you knew much about this? You knew everything about the story, or is there anything that surprised you, shocked you, intrigued you about it?
I think the things that shocked me, just knowing how UM was and has been for a long time, it's succeeded in spite of its limited resources on the football program for so long. And now they made a dramatic change in 180 in that where, you know, Mario Cristobal told me this week, you know, he wasn't talking to anybody till after the season. And he said the powers that be at Miami basically knew, like, Mario's at a place with great resources who they're going to do everything it takes to compete for a national title and to win national title. And unless you're going to do that, we're not even having a conversation. And Miami has done all that and more. And I think, you know, we were at this 6 month kind of window where we started working on this story about, like, okay, we know what the framework is. Now, how has it come together? And you see, you know, them paying a lot of money to get Josh Gattis, who was the nation's, you know, top assistant coach last year, won the Broyles Award. He leaves Michigan to go to Miami. And that was a big head turning move. And there was a bunch of those moves, staffing wise, that Cristobal was able to do. They gave him a 10-year contract. I think the commitment. And so you're seeing it. You're seeing it on the NIL front. You're seeing it on the facilities front. And I think so what we really want to do with that story at The Athletic was kind of, for all the people who have ever heard, oh, you know, the U is back and you roll your eyes because we've heard that a bunch. You know, the U is different right now. And that's kind of how you know, it was. We have this kind of, you know, the inside look at what is actually going on there. And it's kind of fascinating to see this transformation that has already started to take place there.
I highly recommend the story. For everyone listening, that story is up on The Athletic right now. You can also find it. Bruce has some links to it at Bruce Feldman, CFB. I know we're on the other side of the country, and there probably aren't many Miami fans listening, but there are many college football fans listening. It's a fascinating story, really good read. He is Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports and The Athletic. Bruce, thanks so much for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Bruce.
All right, this hour, Jake and Stacy, brought to you by Mazda of Everett. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, we just talked about it with Bruce, but the biggest story in sports today, it's not the NFL, it's not NBA playoffs, it's not even NHL playoffs. No, Jake. It is fireworks in the SEC. Major shots fired between Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. Who's in the right?
Neither are in the right, and I agree with Bruce Feldman 100%. These are ridiculous allegations that are being thrown around by both Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, not because they're not true necessarily, but because it's like throwing a stone in a glass house. I mean, they are doing the same exact things, and yet they are trying to point at each other and act like they're the bad guys and they're the good guys in these situations. And obviously Nick Saban's the one that started this. He also, Nick Saban went out to say that and make an accusation that Jackson State had offered had paid a player, a recruit, $1 million to come there. And Deion Sanders now is furious and upset and said that he will be addressing these claims today. And I just think that Nick Saban in this situation usually can get away with a lot. He really put his foot in his mouth on this one, and I'm going to be curious to see what the fallout is. But neither of these guys are right, and it just goes to show the craziness that has changed the dynamic of college football with the NIL and how everybody is trying to adjust and cope with the changes.
Second down. All right, speaking of the NIL system, does it need regulation in college football? How would it work? I mean,
At some point, I believe that it would need some regulation, but I don't even know what that looks like, to be honest with you, Stacey. I mean, this is the one issue that I have not heard anybody come up with a good solution in terms of regulation with the NIL right now. And that is saying something with a lot of the smart collective minds that I personally know and look up to in this college football space. I mean, it is one of those where my advice would be, you have to let this play out over the next 2 years. You have to watch it. You have to observe it. You have to watch the fallout. You have to watch the successes and then be able to come in with slight regulations to be able to, you know, or as Bruce Feldman said, guardrails to be able to keep things on track. I don't believe you can come down with heavy regulations whatsoever because that would defeat the purpose of opening up NIL to begin with. But there does need to be some aspect of this where you are able to monitor how these collectives or booster clubs are giving money to these athletes and how that transpires, what that relationship is like. Is it healthy between the player and the athlete and the school ultimately? And we're not going to really know the entire fallout of this for the next couple years.
Third down. Four Seahawks rookies you think have the best chance to be starters from day one. So who are those four?
To me, it's very easy. Charles Cross, no-brainer. Abraham Lucas, I think, absolutely. Ken Walker may surprise people, and people may say, well, what about Rashad Penny? Absolutely. Rashad Penny is going to get the first crack at this thing, and he, rightfully so, will be the starter until proven he cannot be, given the last six games of the season. However, Rashad Penny is also incredibly injury-prone, and we've seen him become hurt in the preseason or during training camp, and therefore Ken Walker might have an opportunity to be the day-one starter. It would not surprise me in the least bit. The fourth guy, I believe, has a great opportunity to be a day-one starter for the Seattle Seahawks as a rookie is Kobe Bryant. I just think the young man out of Cincinnati is a very good football player, understands who he is, what his strengths are, and is a kid that stands out to me as a pro's pro. I have not been around him. I have not been able to see him. I have not asked questions about him quite yet. But everything that I have understood from the outside of people that have been around him at Cincinnati and how he played, it just seems to me that the Seahawks were able to get a very, very good player on a steal in the fourth round. And so those are the four guys I think can contribute right away as rookies.
Fourth down. We just spoke with Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports and The Athletic. And yes, we talked about Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. And yes, I will get back to that battle in Hype Train, which is coming up next. But I want to talk a bit about pressure. I asked him whether the NIL deals or the changing landscape of football recruiting is changing the pressure faced by athletes. And he said, Stacey, you actually work with someone who has great insight into that better than I do. So, Jake, you're fourth down. Give us some insight into that pressure. What's something many sports fans will never understand about being one of those recruits?
Well, I mean, being one of those recruits, first of all, there is the aspect of expectations, right? What you're going to do, what you're going to provide. And a lot of it is positive. Everyone is hopeful that you can be the guy that's going to come in here and take the program to the next level. You know, in my experience, it was a double-edged sword in regards to that I did not go to the local schools. I did not go to Washington or Washington State, and how everybody in my hometown was not happy with me. And the fallout that happened with my family, with friends, I mean, all of it. I mean, it was very real. It was very intense. Still feel it to this day at times.
It's still wild to me that there are people who will text a 31-year-old about a decision he made when he was 18, but they aren't saying it to tease him. Like, Curtis and I will tease you.
Yeah.
They're saying it to intentionally try to hurt you, and it's like, bro, you're that mad?
Yes.
You're that mad? I mean, you double alum, and you're that mad?
Yeah.
Chill.
Yeah, absolutely.
Calm
and so
down.
So you had that part of it for me, but then you go, you know, to BYU, and there was all these expectations. Well, now, as Bruce said, you're having people that you never know, that you never knew, that are coming to you and saying, hey, let me show you the ropes of how this is done. Let me show you what it's like to be here, or, you know, trying to just be around you and influence you just to be able to say, hey, I know this guy. I know and have the inside track to tickets, or I can call him, or whatever the case may be. You have people that are hanging around you or hanging onto you or trying to do so, that you have to manage who's real, who's not, who actually can benefit you and help you, and who is a problem. Then the other part is you've got to go into a locker room that everyone is looking at you and saying, oh, this is the guy that's going to save us, huh? This is the guy that's going to, you know, has all the big expectations around him. Let's see what he's all about. And so I think that you have a lot of players that also look at you from that standpoint in a negative way. And they're waiting for you to mess up or screw up because, you know, it's annoying that you're getting all this attention you just walked in the building and here you are, right? And so there's a lot to it. But, you know, look, those are all the downsides of it. But those are the pressures. Those are the things that you're trying to manage as a young kid and really changing from being a high school kid where you're a big fish in a small pond to now, you know, going into this big space that is college football and trying to manage all these different dynamics and do it in a healthy way. It's a tough deal. It's a tough thing to manage. And it's not for the faint of heart. I'll say that.
No, absolutely not. I think, too, there's a dehumanization of athletes that happens by many people. And I see it at the professional level a lot. There are even aspects of my job where I try not to do that, but you find yourself speaking so analytically about someone and have to remind yourself they're a real person, right?
Yeah.
The difference being that while I think that is really tacky and lame to do to professionals, there's another layer that makes it gross when you're doing it about an 18-year-old who's not being paid. And you see a lot of it still where people, grown adults, will root for the failure of this person, celebrate the failure of that person, criticize that person. It's just a very weird culture that at the one hand is fun and wonderful and brilliant because it's college football and there's almost nothing more fun, and on the other side has a very dark underbelly, and one of them is the way that we almost celebrate the pressure placed on those athletes. So it's fascinating. Thanks for sharing that with us. We're going to have a little fun here.
I just like the fact that Bruce had said that it was not that long ago.
No, I appreciate when he said it was 12 years ago. I actually like that part of it when he clarified that it was, I want to say, over a decade ago when you were looking at those schools, Jake, when you made your decision.
Okay, all right. Well, at least it wasn't 2 decades ago, like some people.
I did not graduate high school 2 decades ago.
You're right. That's being generous.
Oh, my God. Did I graduate? No, I didn't. No, I definitely didn't. I had to do math in my head for a minute. All right, we're going to get to this or that in about 15 minutes. Before we do, though, it is time to head to the station for Hype Train. That battle between Jimbo and Saban, I'm going to make you choose. It's next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, this or that coming your way in 15. Before we get to it, though, it is time for Hype Train. So let's go to the station. All right, first Hype Train in here. By the way, you play by telling me whether or not you're buying into the trend. I'm going to tell you a trend that's happening in the world of sports, a take, a prediction, whatever it is. I'm going to say a phrase. If you agree with it, you're boarding the train. If you disagree with it, you are not. It is nothing but a hype train. You're staying at the station. Paul, you're playing as well. Paul in for Curtis today, so here we go. Jake, you're first. In the battle of words between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, if you had to choose, Fisher is in the right.
Boarding the hype train, sound the train.
I knew it.
If you made me have to choose, Jimbo Fisher is in the right. because guess what? He didn't do anything wrong, didn't do anything illegal, did everything that was currently in the state that the college football dynamic is in right now. And to be called out in that way, or to have Nick Saban try to degrade the success that they were able to put together, or degrade the program of Texas A&M, degrade Jimbo Fisher and his ability to recruit and his ability to put together a great great program, yeah, I'd be pretty upset too. I'd be pretty mad, and it might be, it might make me willing to call one of my former mentors a narcissist and say that he should be slapped for the comments that he has made. I think Jimbo Fisher went a little too aggressive in this and trying to point the finger at Nick Saban, but I don't think a press conference was necessary to respond to Nick Saban, but he went there. He absolutely went there.
The hype train is that in the battle of words between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, if you had to choose, Fisher's in the right. Jake says, all right, yes, I'm boarding this train. I have to say he is. Paul, what do you think?
I am on the train as well. I just think...
There we go.
I just don't think Saban has much of a leg to stand on with that argument anymore. And I just don't think, while I agree the press conference, a series of tweets or a statement could have been fine, but I don't know. I think this is going to be a nice little build-up to college football as well. So give me some more of these big-time coaches going after each other.
I'm very okay with it. As a consumer of regular reality television, this is what it's about. And everyone who's obsessed with this story and makes fun of reality television, this is what it is. It is people in real life having these ridiculous arguments, and all you do is talk to your friends about who's right. That's exactly what it is. I am on board with you guys. Fisher, if I had to choose, is in the right. He's making it personal with Nick Saban. They have a personal relationship, though, so I guess that's his prerogative. Nick Saban pointing fingers saying anyone else is cheating and making college football unfair is a little too rich for my blood. Next hype train into the station.
And also, yeah. Nick Saban currently is going to be on the radio, Sirius XM. So I am just like,
I want them
refreshing, trying to hear.
I would rather they keep holding press conferences.
Like, oh,
I would
come on,
doing
Nick.
Press conferences
on Sirius XM. I didn't mean to single anyone out, and I apologize for that.
Don't back down, Nick. Don't back down. This is great content. Next
come
hype
on,
train.
Nick.
George Kirby gets the start today for the Mariners, who open the final series of a road trip against the Boston Red Sox. First pitch is at 4:10 p.m. Here's the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. George Kirby will continue the great pitching trend this week against a tough Red Sox lineup. So we are predicting a great day for Kirby.
Can I give a little admission?
Yes.
So far, I have not been right up to this point. So
you're kind of choosing the opposite on purpose.
I may or may not be. So I'm going to say George Kirby is not going to have a strong performance against the Boston Red Sox today.
You're trying to do some...
And hoping that he will.
Got it.
Hoping that he really, really will.
Trying some luck here. Well, yes. Paul, do you think George Kirby will have a phenomenal day today against a tough, though underperforming, Red Sox lineup?
I am all aboard the train for the Kirby guy. I think he's really great. As someone that's coming into Mariners fandom, he is one of the most exciting pitchers, I think, to watch, and someone that's really great. He's going to kick off a series sweep against the Boston Red Sox in Boston.
Okay.
And Trevor Story is going to hit a few home runs, though. So I will say he will not be able to beat Trevor Story. Trevor Story will bounce back. That's just because of my Rockies fandom coming back out.
That's fine. That's understandable. I totally get it. All right. Next type train in here. Sticking with the Mariners for this one. Kyle Lewis ends his rehab assignment on Monday. We found out from Jerry DePoto this morning that the Mariners will make a decision then. So here's the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. Kyle Lewis will be on the active roster Tuesday morning.
Boarding this hype train, and I don't think this is a hard one to get on. I mean, they are really looking for... Is that a new horn? Is that a new...
Yeah, it's a little car that goes by.
It's a truck, not a train.
Just horn. Deal with it, okay?
All right. I can roll with
We're
it.
We're trying to lower our carbon footprint.
Carbon footprint with a,
I like the cover,
with a diesel truck.
Okay, yeah. Well, I
it's one of those new U trucks.
We've got electric diesel trucks. I don't know how it comes together, but
it's too scientific to explain.
This is a sports
like
show.
In terms, yeah.
Oh my gosh, so Kyle good. But yes, he Lewis will be. He will be with the Mariners on Tuesday morning. I have zero doubts about it. As soon as he is done with this rehab stint, they are putting him on this roster, and he would be a welcomed addition, a much needed addition to this lineup.
All right, Paul. First of all, someone questioning you saying Trevor Story would hit a couple home runs. They're maybe not buying it. I'm not sure. But Paul, are you boarding the train that Kyle Lewis will be on the Mariners active roster Tuesday morning?
Yeah, I don't, as long as there's nothing that happens in the next, I'd say, couple of days. But yeah, I'm all aboard and all aboard to Kyle Lewis bringing some life into this Mariners offense.
I am also all aboard. Now, I wasn't quite sure just because Kyle Lewis has had the worst, most horrible luck with injuries. It just feels like nothing can go right for the kid and you feel awful for him. However, I think that a while ago, Jerry DePoto said that they were hoping to have him back up by the beginning of June, end of May. He sounded very optimistic this morning, though didn't commit to anything. He just said, we're going to make a decision. We're going to make a decision. Andy McKay, though, sounded very optimistic. I think Andy McKay's interview with us gives me the most hope.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Next and last hype train into the station. Jimmy Butler and the Heat took Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Game 2's tonight, tip-off at 5:30. Your final hype train of the day, that's going to continue because the Heat are going to sweep.
I think they are. I'm getting on this hype train. Yeah, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. I think the Heat are going to get it done. I'm just a big Jimmy Butler fan at the current moment. And the reason why I'm a big Jimmy Butler fan is because I love to see improbable stars. And a really good player like Jimmy Butler, who has finally kind of found himself and in the right situation, 32 years old, it does feel like this is one of the rare opportunities for him to be able to get to it, not only in NBA Finals, but to be able to potentially win.
All right, Paul, the final hype train is the Heat are going to have game two against the Celtics tonight, and that win streak is going to continue because the Heat will sweep.
I am off the train here. I don't think the Heat will sweep. I think the Heat will win. You just can't go into Boston. You're not going to be able to go to Boston and win every single time, especially the Celtics. And here's the crazy part. Al Horford is going to have another big game. Is it going to be tonight? I don't know. But he's going to save the Celtics in a big situation again. But no sweep, but I definitely have the Heat going on to the finals.
I have the Heat advancing. I think the Celtics are just too good to sweep at this point. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app, wrapping things up with This or That coming your way next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, it's This or That, brought to you by All Red Heating and Cooling. You tell me whether you want one of two choices. You have to choose. There's no outs. You have to choose. So here we go. Player rivalries or coaching rivalries?
The best coaching rivalry I've seen is we got to witness it here in Seattle between Pete Carroll and Jim Harbaugh. That was amazing. However, what always makes a rivalry better is when it's a player-to-player rivalry. So I am picking player rivalry over coaching rivalry all day, every day, because it's the players on the field that actually make the game. And I you get to watch, like for football, for example, when it's a, you know, it's a defensive end who has a rivalry with the quarterback or something like that, you get to see that direct conflict happen in real time. Who gets the better of each other? And, you know, and if there's a big play that is made, how do they react? What do they do in the moment?
Especially if they're opposite. Like if you have a wide receiver corner rivalry.
Oh, yes.
Peak, chef's kiss.
Oh, 100%. Richard Sherman, Michael Crabtree,
exactly.
Right? I mean, just beautiful stuff.
Who was with, was it Crabtree in Akeem? Who was pulling the chain
Talib?
Off?
Oh, Akeem Talib.
Yeah. Yep.
That's who it was.
Mm-hmm.
The chain pulling was peak.
So good.
Paul, player rivalry or coach rivalry?
Give me player rivalries all day.
I
don't, you know, as much as it's fun with stuff, like, do I really care about the coach? No, I want, like you said, I want the corner lining up against the wide receiver. I want the Von Miller and Tom Brady trash talk. And especially with baseball, too, I think as it gets late, it might not be exactly player to player, but you get some of these tight rivalry division games in September.
Yep.
And man, when you take that Astros series, for example, last year with the Mariners when they were able to, you know, take it, they kind of flipped the switch and were really going off. The energy and all that comes from the players and the rivalries between them. Not coaches at the end of the day, yep. Especially baseball. What do I care about what the manager says about another baseball team?
Well,
really?
And, like, managers, coaches, they're never as good about the rivalry. Like, the Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban stuff was great this morning, and what's happened since then? Saban's already backed off.
Yeah, he's already backed off. Give me some player coach rivalries.
Committed.
Pedro, and who was that pitching coach of the Yankees or whoever that came running out there that one time trying to take him down?
Yes.
That's what I want. All right, next up here, Nick Foles or Baker Mayfield? Baker, it's not close. It's Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, it's 100% Baker.
Baker Mayfield is more talented.
I am going to represent the one Curtis Rogers because he is not here. Bear down, Nick Foles, and purely just because I am a proxy of Curtis Rogers in this moment, but I would also say Baker Mayfield.
The answer is Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
No, Nick Foles is a more successful NFL quarterback.
Curtis, I hope you can hear me right now. Baker Mayfield is a better quarterback than Nick Foles. He's heated.
Yeah.
He is heated.
I'm telling you right now, he's
Paul,
real
back
mad.
Me up.
Yeah, no, I, to be honest, I'm shocked that the Seahawks haven't gone after Baker Mayfield. I know, obviously, the contract, the money, and all that stuff involved, waiting to see what happens. But Baker Mayfield's a good quarterback, and I think is someone that gets undervalued. I think the injuries last year we really saw, and not necessarily the most amount of, like, threats down the field. He has a couple of good wide receivers, but, you know, I didn't think he had enough protection and everything. But give me Baker Mayfield over Nick Foles 10 times out of 10.
This or that.
I guess in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. All this right. or that, a sexy pitcher or a command pitcher.
Do you
want DeGrom or do you want Gonzalez at his very, very, very best?
I'm going to be contrarian here. And as somebody that grew up watching Jamie Moyer, there's nothing wrong with a command pitcher.
There's nothing.
There's something.
There is an art
to the command pitcher. Think about it. They can't pitch over 90 miles an hour and they're still getting people out. That's impressive.
Name me anything on the planet sexier than a great pitch.
Oh, just a looping curveball that starts at
just
the eyes.
Nasty, and filthy stuff.
I mean, it's so much better. You look at those pitching ninja gifs, and then when they have the full spin and they're on the knee and they completely get K'd.
Total whip.
You value the command pitcher. It's really important. But man, when you got a pitcher that just comes and deals with some nasty stuff, that's exciting, especially when they throw some gas and then they're like, oh, I'm going to slow it down by 20 miles an hour with a pitch that starts at your eyes and it's going to drop into the zone. Give me a sexy pitcher.
Listeners letting us know it was Don Zimmer.
Oh, Don Zimmer. There we go. There we go.
Since we are an interactive show, that's what our reviews say about us. We're going to go to the text line here for this one. Okay, we're going to get a couple in. Number one, this or that, Chinese food or Mexican food?
I love Mexican restaurants. Mexican food. 100%.
Yeah. I enjoy Mexican restaurants for the chips and salsa and the chips and queso. I will pick Chinese food, though. Chinese food, so good.
You get the
so
Chinese good. Food leftovers, so you're getting more meals out of your Chinese
you
food
are.
Experience. But I think if I'm going to say, hey,
if
you're
you
get
going. One to, meal.
Yeah, if you're getting the one meal. Man, a nice big burrito or some enchiladas or something like that. But I love that's a really tough one.
Yeah, Chinese food though. I don't know. I love Chinese food. All right, here we go. Here's another this or that, okay. Stacey. Oh, this is all purely hypothetical.
Something tells me it's not going to be hypothetical, but okay.
Allowing your teenage daughter to date or not allowing your teenage daughter to date for research purposes. Let's just say this teenage daughter turns 14 on Sunday. All hypothetical, of course.
Would you allow your teenage son to date?
Ooh, that's a great question.
If the answer is yes, granted, you're monitoring, you're asking them, where are you going? Who
yes.
are you, you know, whose house are you visiting?
Yes.
Who are the parents? Then, yeah. Treat your kids.
Stacey, you're talking about a hypothetically, this is a father texting in.
Yeah, but it's kids are innocent. I had a boyfriend, my first boyfriend, when I was in eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And literally all we did was hold hands in the hallway because boys and girls still make each other nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And wrote notes to each other. And then he broke up with me because he wanted to go after Lacey. Ironically, her name rhymed with mine. And I'll say
Whoa.
It again.
Whoa.
Yeah. That's her real name. That's her government name. I'll put it on blast.
How betrayed did you feel?
I was incredibly betrayed, and he broke up with me through our mutual friend, Nicole.
Ooh, the friend
Real
breakup.
Names. I'm using real names.
Wow. Wow, he didn't even have the guts to tell you?
No.
Oh, that's classic middle school. Right there, that's, come on now.
It's some classic middle school love.
Heartbroken. We were together for, I want to say, a week.
Yeah. That's the longest.
It was beautiful, though. Right. It was truly like, I was like, we're going to get married. are going to be married.
The hand-holding, you'll never forget it. You know, it just, you'll never
Clearly
forget.
Not. I mean, it's made this big of an impact. I mean, she's naming names.
I will say, if someone ditched me,
Lacey,
someone with the same sounding name
Isn't
as you,
that the part that I can't get over? That's the part I can't get over.
I would be devastated.
I wonder.
I'd be devastated.
Yeah, I wonder what they're doing now.
I mean, I'm guessing it didn't work out, right?
I'm gonna guess that it did not.
Okay.
Do we have another one on there?
Yeah. No. This was the last one here that I had from the text line. Here.
Someone sent in another food one. Mac and cheese or mashed potatoes?
Mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese. What are you talking about?
I love mashed potatoes, but like, you're going to compare those two?
You got to compare two similar. So like mac and cheese or spaghetti. It would still be mac and cheese, but two more similar dishes.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, but like, so I guess maybe go with the sides type of stuff. But it's like, mac and cheese is probably the second best side behind French fries.
It is one of a kind. That would be a good one. This or that, mac and cheese or French fries.
I just realized her name was Casey.
Oh.
It wasn't Lacey, it's Casey.
I know what you did, Casey.
Oh, my gosh.
I wonder if she's listening.
Mac and cheese or fries, that's where the line is drawn for me. I love mac and cheese. Like, really, really good mac and cheese on the side is premium. However, more often than not, you're going to have better fries than you will mac and cheese.
Ooh, I don't
know. It's hard to mess up.
I guarantee you. Yes, it is.
Soggy fries.
How about this? How about, listen to this one. Harder to mess up. Pizza or fries?
Pizza's harder
to mess up.
Yeah, pizza's harder to mess up.
It's pretty hard to mess
up. A French fry can't be undercooked, because for me, then it's trash. You got to have a crispy French fry. At least enough crunch with a little softness.
All right, I've taken us way too late here. We got to get going. You guys are going to have
All right, I'm
hour.
Hungry.
You guys are going to... I got to go find Casey. You guys are going to have about an hour of Wyman and Bob here. And then
Casey, run!
Brought to the Mariners pregame show as they begin this series against the Red Sox. We'll be back tomorrow. Come on.